Hello, and thank you for joining us once again here at That Which Cannot Be Destroyed. Today I will be perusing, diving deep down the rabbit hole of a Wikipedia article titled Quantum Mind, also known as Quantum Consciousness. Hope you enjoy. The quantum mind, or quantum consciousness, is a group of hypotheses proposing that classical mechanics alone cannot explain consciousness, positing instead that quantum mechanical phenomena such as entanglement and superposition may play an important role in the brain's function and could explain critical aspects of consciousness. These scientific hypotheses are as yet untested and can overlap with quantum mysticism. All right, so we have in this little Wikipedia article here, we have blue highlighted phrases, words or phrases that we can click on. So let's click on some of them. Just within that one little sentence there, there's several of these things. Follow me down the rabbit hole. We're gonna clack. See, it's too early and I haven't had enough coffee yet, but we're gonna click on classical mechanics because it's highlighted. Let's see where it takes us. And by the way, I went to another area of Wikipedia called Talk. There's a section called Article and one called Talk that I didn't even know existed. I'm not sure even how long it's been around. But I clicked on it, and it's, people just arguing about how shitty the article is. So we're not going to do that here today, because I'm not into that. Somebody will read one of these articles, and of course they know more than whoever wrote the article, right? Because they're doing the groundbreaking research themselves, right? Yeah, we're not going to get into all that stuff, but I just find this fascinating, this world, and I am just trying to understand more about it. And so we clicked on classical mechanics here, and it says it's a physical theory describing the motion of macroscopic objects from projectiles to parts of machinery and astronomical objects such as spacecraft, planets, stars, and galaxies. For objects governed by classical mechanics, if the present state is known, it is possible to predict how it will move in the future, determinism, and how it has moved in the past, reversibility. So I've heard this determinism before, spoken about in terms of like free will versus determinism. So I guess it applies also to, let's see, let's click on it. Let's sink further and further down the rabbit hole. So now we're clicking determinism. Determinism is a philosophical view, okay? So I understood correctly, because free will is a philosophical view as well, right? Determinism is a philosophical view where all events are determined completely by previously existing causes. Deterministic theories throughout the history of philosophy have developed from diverse and sometimes overlapping motives and considerations. The opposite of determinism is some kind of indeterminism, otherwise called non-determinism or randomness. Determinism is often contrasted with free will, although some philosophers claim that the two are compatible. And I would have to agree with that the two are compatible. I can see both. I can see the free will playing a large part in someone's life, and also determinism. I don't know. I kind of see it like free will is determining your future. You know, but you, determinism got you to where you're at. You know, like what city, state, country, continent you're born on. That was due to determinism, right? Due to the previously existing causes brought you to where you're at. But I also think about the free will. And I guess the argument could be made that the free will, or whatever voice you hear in your head, or ideas that you get to do something, to make a move, or to move somewhere else, or to get another job or something, even those thoughts and that free will is part of determinism as well, because based on the type of thought that you have, comes from previously existing causes, the things that caused you to think that way. I could see that, but I also think that there's something more to that, to the free will. And I think these the will is the voice of God, and not God from outside of oneself. You know, we're getting into the whole thing here about, I don't know, I don't want to tell my whole life story here, but this is I'm going to try to stay focused here because I have a tendency to go off the charts sometimes. So we're in the determinism. We're going to back up a little bit here. Press the back button. We're back to classical mechanics here. So it's got a math equation that is just a foreign language to me. So, okay. The earliest formation of classical mechanics is often referred to as Newtonian mechanics. It consists of the physical concepts based on foundational works of Sir Isaac Newton and the mathematical methods. Woo! Excuse me. Invented by Gottfried Wilhelm Leibniz, Joseph Louis Lagrange, Leonard Euler, and other contemporaries in the 17th century to describe the motion of bodies under the influence of forces. Feel free to scream at me if you know the proper pronunciation of these names. Feel free to just express yourself and scream, "You idiot, how do you not know the proper pronunciations?" Okay. Later, more abstract methods were developed, leading to the reformulations of classical mechanics known as Lagrangian mechanics and Hamiltonian mechanics. These advances, made predominantly in the 18th and 19th centuries, extend substantially beyond earlier works, particularly through their use of analytical mechanics. They are, with some modification, also used in all areas of modern physics. Classical mechanics provides accurate results when studying large objects that are not extremely massive and speeds not approaching the speed of light. When the objects being examined have about the size of an atom diameter, it becomes necessary to introduce the other main subfield of mechanics, quantum mechanics. Okay. So we've gotten back to quantum mechanics, so we're going to leave classical mechanics and hit the back button, because the article has led us back to the quantum field, okay? So a little history here. Eugene Wigner developed the idea that quantum mechanics has something to do with the workings of the mind. He proposed that the wave function collapses due to its interaction with consciousness. Freeman Dyson argued that mind, as manifested by the capacity to make choices, is to some extent inherent in every electron. Other contemporary physicists and philosophers considered these arguments unconvincing. Victor Stenger characterized quantum consciousness as a myth, having no scientific basis that should take its place among with God's unicorns and dragons. Well, he sounds like he's no fun, really, right? Victor Stenger, let's look into this guy. So this guy thinks that quantum physics should be taken as serious as God's unicorns and dragons. Well, let's see. Oh, this guy's relatively from modern times. Born 1935, passed away 2014. May God rest his soul. I mean that with all due respect. Victor Stenger. Let's see, he was an American particle physicist, philosopher, author, and religious skeptic. Following a career as a research scientist in the field of particle physics, Stenger was associated with New Atheism, and he authored popular science books. He published 12 books for general audiences on physics, quantum mechanics, cosmology, philosophy, religion, atheism, and pseudoscience, including the 2007 bestseller, God, The Feld Hypothesis, How Science Shows That God Does Not Exist. His final book was God and the Multiverse, Humanity's Expanding View of the Cosmos. He was a regular featured science columnist for the Huffington Post, an advocate for removing the influence of religion from scientific research, commercial activity, and the political process. Stenger coined the quote, "Science flies you to the moon. Religion flies you into buildings." Whoa! Yeah, so that guy went hard. He was like majorly against religion. I remember this time. This is when the movement of New Atheism was very popular. It was really cool to be an atheist during that time, and then something happened, something changed, and that all, I think that certain guy, like this guy, passed away in 2014. I noticed that it stopped being cool in 2016. Stopped being cool to be an atheist in 2016. And these guys were starting to, I guess they were kind of dying off. Christopher Hitchens, I remember him, he passed away a little bit. Probably, I think it to my memory, a few years before this guy did. Or maybe several years before this guy did. So maybe they were losing some of their influence because some of the guys were passing away. And then I noticed some of these other guys being taken down, like Lawrence Krauss was being canceled, and Richard Dawkins, I think he tweeted something that highly triggered and offended everybody. So, yeah, the New Atheism wave kind of fizzled out around 2016. It's still there. Some of those guys are still there. They're still writing books. They're still going on to podcasts and things, but it's not as popular as it once was. You know, it was a pop culture thing for a while. We're going to move back to quantum mind here. That's our home base for this episode, quantum mind. And I have to remind myself to stay focused on that one. So we're in the section of approaches now. David Bohm viewed quantum theory and relativity as contradictory, which implied a more fundamental level in the universe. He claimed that both quantum theory and relativity pointed to this deeper theory, which he formulated as a quantum field theory. This more fundamental level was proposed to represent an undivided wholeness and an implicate. Implicate order from which arises the explicate order of the universe as we experienced it. So I don't know what either of those are, but they're both highlighted. Let's click on implicate order here. Let's see what this does. Implicate order and explicate order are ontological concepts for quantum theory, coined by theoretical physicist David Bohm during the early 1980s. They are used to describe two different frameworks for understanding the same phenomenon or aspect of reality. In particular, the concepts were developed in order to explain the bizarre behaviors of subatomic particles, which quantum physics describes and predicts with elegant precision but struggles to explain. In Baum's Wholeness and the Implicate Order, he used these notions to describe how the appearance of such phenomenon might appear differently or might be characterized by varying principal factors depending on context such as scales. The implicate, also referred to as the enfolded order, is seen as a deeper and more functional or more fundamental order of reality. In contrast, the explicate or unfolded order includes the abstractions that humans normally perceive. As he wrote, in the enfolded or implicate order, space and time are no longer the dominant factors determining the relationships of dependence or independence or different elements. Rather, an entirely different sort of basic connection of elements is possible, from which our ordinary notions of space and time, along with those of separately existent material particles, are abstracted as forms derived from the deeper ones. These ordinary notions, in fact, appear in what is called the explicate or unfolded order, which is a special and distinguished form contained within the general tonality of all the implicate orders. So Baum wrote that back in 1980. Well, we will get back to quantum mind. Let's see. So we understand a little bit about Baum now and the way that he saw quantum theory and relativity. I think he saw them as contradictory, right? Let's see. According to philosopher Pavel Pilkanen, which I know I did not pronounce properly, I'm sorry about that, Baum's suggestion, quote, leads naturally to the assumption that the physical correlate of the logical thinking process is at the classically describable level of the brain, while the basic thinking process is at the quantum theoretical describable level. It was suggested by theoretical physicists David Baum and Basil Hiley that the mind and matter both emerge from an implicate order. Baum and Hiley's approach to mind and matter is supported by philosopher Pavel Pilkanen. Pilkanen underlies unpredictable, uncontrollable, indivisible, and non-logical features of conscious thought and draws parallels to a philosophical movement some call post-phenomenology. In particular, to Pauli Pilkow's, forgive me for this, these pronunciations, in particular to Pauli Pilkow's notion of the aconceptual experience, an unstructured, unarticulated, and pre-logical experience. I don't know if I understood any of that. You know, if anybody's out there, you're screaming at me, you get this stuff, maybe even you want to correct how I pronounce the last names, I would appreciate that if you could leave a message. I don't know if there's a way to leave a message on this Anchor app. I got to figure this stuff out. If you can find a way to message me or comment in any of the podcast apps that you're listening to this in, please feel free to do so. And it would help me out a lot. It would help the show out a lot too. So we have made it to Penrose and Hameroff. And right underneath that, it says orchestrated objective reduction. It says main article, and it says that. But let's read about Penrose here. I think I've seen him before on Rogan. Roger Penrose. Theoretical physicist Roger Penrose and anesthesiologist Stuart Hameroff collaborated to produce the theory known as orchestrated objective reduction. Penrose and Hameroff initially developed their idea separately and later collaborated to produce ORC-OR, which is an abbreviation of Orchestrated Objective Reduction, in the early 1990s. They reviewed and updated their theory in 2013. Penrose's argument stemmed from Gödel's incompleteness theorems. In his first book on consciousness, The Emperor's New Mind, 1989, he argued that while a formal system cannot prove its own consistency, Gödel's unprovable results are provable by human mathematics. Penrose took this to mean that human mathematicians are not formal proof systems and not running a computable algorithm. According to Bringsjord and Zhao, I think that's how you say that name, this line of reasoning is based on fallacious equivocation on the meaning of computation. In the same book, Penrose wrote, quote, "One might speculate, however, that somewhere deep in the brain, cells are to be found of single quantum sensitivity. If this proves to be the case, then quantum mechanics will be significantly involved in brain activity." Penrose determined that wave function collapse was the only possible physical basis for a non-computable process. Dissatisfied with its randomness, he proposed a new form of wave function collapse that occurs in isolation and called it objective reduction. He suggested each quantum superposition has its own piece of space-time curvature, and that when these become separated by more than one Planck length, they become unstable and collapse. Penrose suggested that objective reduction represents neither randomness nor algorithmic processing, but instead a non-computable influence in space-time geometry, from which mathematical understanding and, by later extension, consciousness derives. This is going to take me a lifetime to understand. I hope that I get there. I am positive and hopeful that I will get to an understanding of this. And I need your guys' help out there, the listener. Dear listener, help me to understand this. Help me to explain this. I really like the title of Roger Penrose's book, The Emperor's New Mind, from 1989. I'm going to click on that. Let's look deeper into this. We got a thumbnail here, picture of the book. It looks like a classic 80s book cover, and the subtitle, well, we'll just read the title and the subtitle here. The Emperor's New Mind, Concerning Computers, Minds, and the Laws of Physics. So that's pretty interesting. Let's see. We'll read a little bit more about this, because I find this very fascinating, plus I love the title of the book. Penrose argues that human consciousness is non-algorithmic and thus is not capable of being modeled by a conventional Turing machine, which includes a digital computer. Penrose hypothesizes that quantum mechanics plays an essential role in the understanding of human consciousness. The collapse of the quantum wave function is seen as playing an important role in brain function. Most of the book is spent reviewing, for the scientifically minded lay reader, a plethora of interrelated subjects such as Newtonian physics, special and general relativity, the philosophy and limitations of mathematics, quantum physics, cosmology, and the nature of time. Penrose interminably describes how each of these bears on his developing theme that consciousness is not algorithmic. Only the later portions of the book address the thesis directly. And here's an overview of the book. Penrose states that his ideas on the nature of consciousness are speculative, and his thesis is considered erroneous by experts in the field of philosophy, computer science, and robotics. So obviously these are just, this is Wikipedia, so other people have written this and maybe referenced it as to why they consider his thesis to be erroneous. The Emperor's New Mind attacks the claims of artificial intelligence using the physics of computing. Penrose notes that the present home of computing lies more in the tangible world of classical mechanics than in the imponderable realm of quantum mechanics. The modern computer is a deterministic system that for the most part simply executes algorithms. Penrose shows that by reconfiguring the boundaries of a billiard table, one might make a computer in which the billiard balls act as message carriers and their interactions act as logical decisions. The billiard ball computer was first designed some years ago by Edward Fredkin and Tommaso Toffoli of the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. So, in the reception section of this, on this book, following the publication of the book, Penrose began to collaborate with Stuart Hameroff on a biological analog to quantum computation involving microtubules, which became the foundation for his subsequent book, Shadows of the Mind, A Search for the Missing Science of Consciousness. Wow, he has some great titles, don't you guys think? Great titles for books, right? Very interesting stuff. We're going to go back to Quantum Mind and see what we can find a little bit here. So I think we spent enough time on Penrose and Hameroff. Probably not enough time for me to understand anything that I just read. I'm sure the more time we spend on this stuff, the more it'll start to sink in, right? And we'll find that bridge between science and spirit that we're looking for here on this show. Between science and philosophy, science and religion, science and spirit, right? All right, what else do we have here? I'm scrolling through the article here. I'm seeing some very big words that I've never seen before. Catecholaminergic neuron electron transport. I don't know if I'm ready to tackle that one. We're gonna just scroll past that one today here. Practical problems. It's all ethical problems. I guess, you know, this is the scientific process. You know, you have a theory, you have an idea, a hypothesis, and then you have a group of researchers and scientists saying why there's problems with it, putting it down. Okay, now we're getting to, we're in a section called ethical problems. Now let's read a little bit about this. Quantum mind theories are often conflated with quantum woo, which is the justification of irrational beliefs by an obfuscatory reference to quantum physics. Buzzwords like energy field, probability wave, or wave-particle duality are used to magically turn thoughts into something tangible in order to directly affect the universe. Some have turned quantum woo into a career, such as Deepak Chopra, who often presents ill-defined concepts of quantum physics as proof for God, quantum soul existing apart from the body, and human access to a field of infinite possibilities. According to Lawrence Krauss, you should be wary whenever you hear something like quantum mechanics connects you with the universe, or quantum mechanics unifies you with everything else. You can begin to be skeptical that the speaker is somehow trying to use quantum mechanics to argue fundamentally that you can change the world by thinking about it. A subjective feeling is not sufficient to make this determination. Humans don't have a reliable subjective feeling for how we do a lot of functions. According to Daniel Dennett on this topic, everybody's an expert, but they think that they have a particular personal authority about the nature of their own conscious experiences that can trump any hypothesis they find unacceptable. Well, I would have to disagree with these guys, because I think if you push yourself to think something into this universe, to think and speak something into this universe, I've seen it happen many, many times. I've seen it happen. And, you know, they can be reductionists and explain it all away, but I've seen that happen. I've seen the law of attraction happen. You know, no matter how cringe any of you think it is, New Thought or the law of attraction, it works. It may not always work, but it works. You know, you can significantly alter your own life, you know, which probably has some type of effect on the rest of reality and the rest of the universe. I am a believer that you can bend reality. So I'm in the camp of the quantum woo here. You know, I don't know how much I would agree with, how much I would disagree with, but we'll get to that in later episodes, I'm sure. We're back to the article here. An ethically objectionable practice by proponents of quantum mind theories involves the practice of using quantum mechanical terms in an effort to make the argument sound more impressive, even when they know that those terms are irrelevant. These names are difficult here. Notes that, quote, trendy parapsychologists, academic relativists, and even the Dalai Lama have all taken their turn at robbing modern physics of a few well-sounding phrases and stretching them far beyond their original scope in order to add scientific weight to various pet theories. At the very least, these proponents must make a clear statement about whether quantum formalism is being used as an analogy or as an actual physical mechanism, and what evidence they are using for support. An ethical statement by a researcher should specify what kind of relationship their hypothesis has to the physical laws. Okay, well, that sounds like a nicer way to kind of put these things. You know, like when we're involving ethics in the conversation. Let's see, what else do we have? Misleading statements of this type have been given, for example, by Deepak Chopra. Chopra has commonly referred to topics such as quantum healing or quantum effects of consciousness, seeing the human body as being undergirded by a quantum mechanical body composed not of matter, but of energy and information. He believes that human aging is fluid and changeable. It can speed up, slow down, stop for a time, or even reverse itself. Whoa, that'd be cool. As determined by one's state of mind. Robert Carroll states that Chopra attempts to integrate Ayurveda with quantum mechanics to justify his teachings. Chopra argues that what he calls quantum healing cures many manner of ailments, including cancer, through effects that he claims are literally based on the same principles of quantum mechanics. This has led physicists to object to his use of the term quantum in reference to medical conditions and the body. Chopra said, "I think quantum theory has a lot of things to say about the observer effect, about non-locality, about correlations. So I think there's a school of physicists who believe that consciousness has to be equated, or at least brought into equation in understanding quantum mechanics. On the other hand, he also claims that quantum effects are just a metaphor. Just like an electron or a photon is an indivisible unit of information and energy, a thought is an indivisible unit of consciousness. In his book, Quantum Healing, Chopra stated that the conclusion that quantum entanglement links everything in the universe and that therefore it must create consciousness. In either case, the references to the word quantum don't mean what physicists would claim, and arguments that use the word quantum shouldn't be taken as scientifically proven. So I guess you get into that area of the con men using spiritual, mystical and spiritual language and a little bit of science, you know, as far as the quantum part of this goes, and how dangerous that can be, and people can be scammed and duped and misled, you know. And you see the guy, I forgot what country he was in, but I think Andy Kaufman went to him to get his cancer removed. And the guy's like pretending to reach into the stomach and pull out the cancer, right? And Andy Kaufman saw the gag. That's not the proper word. Andy Kaufman saw the scam. He saw that his fingers didn't go into the guy, into the person's stomach, and it just, you know, he kind of laughed at that. As far as the movie Man on the Moon goes, I don't know if that happened, if Andy really saw that in real life, but. Yeah, some of these guys are really big scam artists. So I'm glad that we have some of the curmudgeoned, contrarian scientists, atheists out there to kind of hold their feet to the fire and kind of put them in line, you know, put them in line ethically so that less people get scammed, you know, less people get abused by the woo, right? By the quantum woo, not the Wu-Tang, because Wu-Tang is for the children, but by the quantum woo, you know, some of the evil people that exist in that world, they'll just take everything from you in the name of some kind of mysticism. But yeah, I'm going to wrap up the show there, and thank you for listening. That was fun to do, the first Wikipedia rabbit hole that we've gone down on this show, and maybe there will be many more to come. It's kind of a interesting thing, and it seems like it could just go on and on forever. And thank you for hanging out with me here in time and space, and I'll see you again soon. Goodbye.